Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably, and, you know, doing that thing where they help entrepreneurs learn about all of the pitfalls and joys and struggles of being an entrepreneur. They help you do that too through the Startup Hustle podcast. So today, I have to tell you, I am so stoked for today's guest. As you well know at this point, I have a major Jones and a major focus and love and passion for women. It's my thing. And we have with us a thought leader in an area that I have little explored, but I'm looking forward to doing that tonight. We're going to be talking about femtech. And we have with us today Dr. Brittany Barreto, and she is co-founder and executive director of Femtech Focus. So we are about to kick off a really fantastic conversation. Dr. Barreto, thank you so much for tonight.
Definitely. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you got it. So let's hop right into it. My question to you is, tell us, you know what? What is femtech?
That's honestly the perfect place to start, because most people think that it's women in technology, which yeah. I love. I mean, we need more female founders. We need
feminism.
More founders. But what femtech actually is an industry of innovation for women's health and wellness. And so it is medical devices, it's therapeutics, it's digital health. It's anything that is addressing things that solely, disproportionately, or differently affect women. So oftentimes solely, you would think about menopause, periods, endometriosis, differently affect women. So the paradigm for what a heart attack looks like is chest pain and a numb left arm. But actually, that's the symptoms for men. The symptoms for a woman's heart attack is massive fatigue. And so oftentimes women die because even doctors didn't symptoms for women. And then Third is disproportionate. So disproportionately affecting women is like autoimmune disease, Alzheimer's disease. So those are the things we're addressing. And we have male founders. I love our male founders. But we are all in it fighting for women's health equality through innovation.
That's amazing. So just a little bit of context for you, I guess. So Innovate Her KC, we actually had an event a while back where we talked about those disparities in health outcomes. And that was actually one of the big topics that we talked about, the symptoms of a heart attack, how they present differently in women versus men. Another thing that we talked about is the fact that there you often see disparities in health because there is unconscious bias in healthcare against women and communities of color, because, you know, you go into a doctor and you are in pain, and sometimes that pain is minimized by your healthcare provider. And so there is Yeah. So it's a really important conversation, and the fact that you are working in a field that seeks to address it, just, we're not worthy.
Well, yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
I love femtech because, I'm an activist for women's rights, but I feel like I can actually move the needle when I say, we're going to make a product that actually makes a difference, and I feel encouraged when I can actually influence capitalists to care about uteruses by saying you can make a ton of money if you invest in women's health, because there's so much demand and no supply. Right. So I like that I'm actually moving the needle in it.
That's amazing. So, and I love that you kind of gave me a really nice segue, because my next question, you're talking about why you are personally empowered to do the work that you do. And I'd like to hear more about how you came to do the work that you do. So mm-hmm. What did your path to the femtech industry look like?
So my squiggly story.
I love it when you're squiggly.
I am a massive nerd, giant nerd over here. I love science. And so I actually have a PhD in molecular and human genetics. While finishing my PhD in genetics, I realized I had way too much personality to work in a laboratory for the rest of my life. And so I started to explore other careers that PhDs could do. I discovered entrepreneurship, felt like I found my tribe. A little bit of crazy, a whole lot of chaos, a whole lot of passion. So I found my people, and I had a crazy idea for a DNA-based dating app. So merging my entrepreneurship and spirit with my DNA background. And I created a company called Faramore. And Faramore was the first nationwide DNA-based dating app. And so we match singles using a DNA test to look for your pheromones and predicting who you'd have the best sex with. We called it physical chemistry. And I did
that.
It's
a really beautiful euphemism for that, by the way.
Yeah. Today, I think I would rebrand it to be like, just get it, girl. I wouldn't have shied away from it. But so
how effective was the app at predicting compatibility, would you say?
So the science is very, very, very strong. Sorry, I guess my dog wants to make an appearance. He loves when we're live.
We are animal lovers around here.
Yeah. So if you see me petting my lap, it's him.
It's not that kind of show, folks.
Not that weird. So the science is real. But the thing is that humans are so damn complicated. And so the science is actually based off of pheromones and physical chemistry. But humans, we date people based on political leaning, based on education status. We base it off of race. Right. And so at the end of the day, I could use science to tell people who they should date. But at the end of the day, we have so deep internal biases that sometimes that kind of got in the way. But
so is that nature versus nurture kind of converging in who we choose to mate with? Is that what we're talking about here?
Totally. And also that humans have kind of broken out of this evolutionary thing where we are mating based on bias. And not genetic strength, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so it's no longer survival of the fittest or the strongest will out. It's more the geekiest is what really, gets my motor revving kind of deal. The funniest or the tallest or, actually, that's a genetic trait. Never mind.
That's actually genetic. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love that. And I kind of wish I were single at this point, because I'd love to get that try. I would be your guinea pig 100%.
Yeah, our tagline was swab, don't swipe, because we had a cheek swab that you'd take, and it was so much fun. So I fundraised about $1 million from angels in Texas for that company, and I built and scaled, and I made so many mistakes. Now I know I invest in serial entrepreneurs, because I am so much more likely to succeed this time around versus the first time. But I had a great time.
Sure.
Unfortunately, in March of 2019, Apple changed their policies around who can ask for DNA in the App Store. And dating apps are no longer allowed to ask for your DNA. We got kicked off the App Store. And
do you know why that change was made?
Well, actually, as a geneticist, I think it was a really smart move because previously they didn't really have rules around who can ask DNA in the app store because nobody was making apps that asked for your DNA. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're getting into 2018, 2019, and people are making apps. Anyone can make an app, and anyone could technically say, spit in this cup and send it back to me. And as we get further into genetic, you know, technologies, at some point, people can sequence your genome in their garage, technically, you know, not yet necessarily, but it's coming. And so I think actually as a geneticist, it was a really smart move to start making rules about it. But as a business owner, it totally sucked.
I can definitely see that. And I feel like, you know, part of the entrepreneurial journey is success for sure, but definitely failure and heartbreak. And I mean, that's got to be way up there. Such an integral part of your business plan. And all of a sudden, oh, can't do that anymore. When that happened, what was your response? Like, I know what you ended up doing, but how did you feel and how did it kind of inform the way that you went next?
Well, I will just, you know, be open a little bit for any other founder that may be in it right now to kind of normalize it. I was so stressed, my hair was falling out. I was so stressed because I was having an identity crisis. Because at that point I had become a Fairmore lady. Everyone in Houston, Texas, like in the entrepreneurship community, they knew me as a Fairmore lady. So there was literally like an identity crisis where I was like, who am I? And so if you're a founder listening to this and you're at the point where you think you need to close it down and you're like falling apart, it's normal. It's normal. And you're going to get through it. I promise. Pick up some meditation and yoga. You are so worthy. It's fine. Right. So honestly, what motivated me into my next thing was that I was broke and needed a job immediately. I didn't have any savings. I didn't have anything. So I immediately looked for a new job. And just so happens there was a venture fund called Capital Factory. It's the most active fund in Texas, based out of Austin. And they were looking for a Houston-based senior venture associate to launch their Houston branch. And so I knew the Houston scene really well, and they hired me. And so I became a venture capitalist next.
Wow. So was it a bit of culture shock going from the entity who typically asks for funding to the entity that typically gives funding? Like, what was that like?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a hell of a lot less stressful when you're the one with the money.
Sure.
than being the one
begging for it. Falling out, like, locks came back. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so okay. I was feeling a lot better. But one of my biggest lessons, honestly, was that I had always had this fear of investors because I thought they were so much more smarter than I was in terms of especially business and finance and that they just knew all this stuff that I was ignorant to. And then I became one and I worked with VCs and I met lots of general partners of huge funds. And I realized that a lot of them were idiots or they were just plain people. And I was like, hey, wait a second. Like, founders shouldn't be scared of you, you know? And so I just really, I got to see like the power dynamic was actually just this illusion that I had made up. And I think a lot of founders make up. And so I really decided I want to be the founder's advocate. I want to sit on the investor side, but I want to I don't want to just tell founders no. I want to say no and fix these slides or never say that thing again. And I bet the next person might say yes, you know, like, because I think that's a lot amazing. Of investors say no and move on, you know?
Yeah. No, I love that because I know, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs here in the Kansas City area who like they talk to VCs on a regular basis. And then, you know, they just never hear the whys and the how fors, like why wasn't I selected? Why didn't I get tapped? That is, that's fantastic. Thank you for that. I love that attitude.
Yeah. It's my pleasure. I meet a lot of founders that, you know, they're like, what? I shouldn't do that. I've been doing it for 6 months. I talked to 100 investors. None of them told me, don't do that. And I'm like, I'm going to tell you. Unfortunately but just so happens at Capital Factory, Houston-based investor, a lot of the deals I was looking at were oil and gas. And not that I don't think oil and gas is, you know, good investment or whatever. And like, but I do love the earth. And also, I just kind of thought those companies were super boring. Like talking about AI for oil shipments, I was just like, God, I'm just not motivated. I came across an industry that was very new called Femtech, as we just talked about, innovation in women's health and wellness. And I just fell in love. I love Femtech because it's a lot of science and I'm a scientist and nerdy. It's a lot of women's activism because it's not about the future of women's health, like what could be. It's literally like innovating to get women's health on par with men's health. Yeah. Like that's what we're doing.
It's what, instead of like the future, it's this is actually happening right now. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Exactly. So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. And I do want to delve much more deeply into specifically what Femtech looks like and how it can kind of revolutionize not just an industry, but a societal paradigm. Really, like that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about systemic, deeply seated problems that we're trying to solve. But I want to ask you a really quick question. Mm-hmm. and it is related to venture capital. So I'm going to pop us back to, you know, back to the future kind of deal. But talk to me about VC and women. I'm wondering if you have any insights from your time as a venture capitalist. I mean, I think there are very few people out there who don't know that there is a deep, deep discrepancy in funding for women versus men. And then that problem becomes even more dismal when you start talking about women of color. And so I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
I went into venture capital with the like motivation to get more female founders funded. I thought that was the answer. When I became a VC, I realized it's a good fight to fight, but I actually think it would be a lot easier if what we fought for was that there was more women investors, more women general partners of funds, because then they'll naturally fund more women founders. And so that's kind of my ideation of where to fight the fight kind of changed a little bit. Yeah. And I actually, one time I met Scott Kapoor from Andreessen Horowitz and I asked him, hey, like, how are you getting more women controlling capital?
Yeah.
And it's so funny because when you say innovation, technology, women, the only thing that people think about is fund female founders, because that's like the only phrase we've ever apparently said. And so like when I say femtech, people think, oh, females in tech. And I'm like, actually, there's other ways to think about women. Or how do we get women to control capital? Again, immediately think, oh, how do I fund women? So he starts going talking to me about how they're looking at more deals with female founders, they're increasing. And I said, Scott, that's not what I'm asking. I said, how are you getting more women in the deal room saying we need to invest in this deal or that? And he was like, he actually gave a fantastic answer. Scott, if you're listening, I loved your answer.
Way to go, Scott Kapoor.
In the past, they had never had a female GP at Andreessen Horowitz because they always were looking at their inner networks of friends and people they knew and their alumni groups. And what they realized was that, well, if we got rid of that like requirement and we looked for someone who was like the expert in Bitcoin, all of a sudden it was a lot higher of a chance that it could be a woman. And so I was really appreciative. I mean, I was sad that it like they realized that like 2 years ago, but I'm grateful that it's starting to shift.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me. And I, as you're talking, I just know of so many, like I 100% agree with you. Like I totally think that we need to have more female and female focused investors in the room, because so female founders, like they're kind of my bread and butter, and much like you, like, I mean, I'm sure between the two of us, we know a bunch mm-hmm. of female founders, you know, people who are consistently seeking venture capital. And I can't tell you how many female founders I know who come to me and say, you know, I was in a room and I pitched my ass off and I know that I have a great product and a great, like we have, you know, we've validated the idea, we've done the product testing, we have the traction. And some investor at the table said, well, there's just not enough market for it, or I don't understand it. And the fact is, well, that's more of a you problem than a we problem at this point, because just because it's a problem that doesn't affect you doesn't mean that it's not a problem and that there's not potential for market penetration, you know? So that's really fascinating what you just said. And thank you for allowing me that little detour, because I knew that you were going to have some amazing thoughts on it.
It actually fits really well with femtech, because can you imagine pitching something for vaginas?
Yeah.
And if there's no vaginas in the
what
room,
if you don't have one.
So I always say investing is two things. It's logic. How big is the market? What is the business model? What's your credentials? And it's also intuition. Having this feeling of like, oh, I know that like there's something tugging at me at this deal. Like, I know this is the emerging market that's coming, or I know this is an issue for me and all my friends. And so when you're talking about menstrual blood or menopause, hot flashes, if they have never even heard about this, there's no intuition, right? And unfortunately for femtech, usually the sample size for these male investors is an N of one, and it's usually their wife. And you better hope that wife is that one out of three women who have incontinence. You better hope that wife is one out of 10 women that have endometriosis. Because if they're not, they're going to, unfortunately, very often what happens is that they say, I knew it. I knew this wasn't a problem.
Well,
how unscientific is that?
You have to hope that you have that, you know, visibility, but you also have to hope that wife is comfortable talking about those things and that they are open with their spouse. And so that I couldn't agree more. Really quickly, I do need to hop in here, and we need to show some love to Full Scale. Full Scale is this episode's sponsor, and just want to, you know, tell you that if you are looking to build a software team quickly and affordably, Full Scale is the way to do it. We love them, and they sure do love us, because they allow us to do all of this. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Let's get right back into it. You know, one of the things that I want to kind of talk to you about is in your work, you often have to talk about things that are pretty taboo, right? I mean, you're literally wearing a hat that has the words vulva and vagina on it right now. And I love that. Like that. Yes. You know, but one of the things that I think one of the mountains that we kind of need to climb, and correct me if I'm wrong, in femtech would potentially be just normalizing discussions around some of these things. Like, yeah, let's talk about, you know, women's health is a really pretty way to say, to cover some really not what we don't traditionally think of as pleasant to think about, you know, like, menstrual blood and these, you know, scarring in your uterus and like whatever it is, you know, we're talking about some pretty hard topics. And so I want to kind of talk to you about that. Like, what is that like? How do you get people to sit up and pay attention to something that they don't necessarily want to pay attention to?
Well, I think it's a combination of my personality. I don't know what it is, but I'm totally comfortable talking about it. So it takes somebody to being able to talk about it in a way that is, it's not shameful. I'm not aggressive about it. And I think people really just kind of lean into like, she seems approachable. She says the word vagina and she seems friendly about it, you know?
Yeah.
Second, although my PhD is in genetics, it's not even women's health. It's not an MD. There's something about being Dr. Brittany that people are like, oh, she's allowed to say vagina, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's some reason I have permission. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm using that to my advantage. And then third, I think that we are actually at the best time ever in our history, able to normalize it and be able to talk about it. I think that with the Gen Z coming up, they're the most open-minded, you know, generation. We got women being raised by strong moms, you know, men being raised by their mom, and they're, you know, starting to hear this stuff. You know, I think that we have a woman who's the vice president. We have a uterus up in there, right? Like so I think that we're in the moment now that it's maybe it's still taboo, but I think that people even realize, why do I feel funny talking about menopause? I probably should, like, I shouldn't feel weird about that, you know? And you just got to open the door. And I think people go the rest of the way.
You know? Well, so I think that's great. And I do, I think now we have reached that point in time, Dr. Barreto, where we're going to need to talk about what exactly femtech is and what it looks like in your world. So talk to us a little bit about that. We've kind of given some context. We've talked around some issues around it, but talk to us about femtech.
So Femtech Focus is a nonprofit that I started because I, you know, came across femtech, fell in love with the definition, said, I want to work in this industry. And I actually was looking for jobs at a femtech fund. I was like Googling femtech funds, femtech conference, femtech meetups. And I realized, and this is 2019, I was like, where's the femtech things? Like, where's the infrastructure for femtech? Where's the accelerator? Sure. Where's the... And all I could find at that point in 2019 was one femtech fund, and that was Portfolia. There was no conference. There was no virtual network. There was nothing. And so I was like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. I feel the founder in me. Feel the she's coming out. And I knew I needed to build something for the industry. And so I started a podcast in March of 2020. So it's almost a year. Femtech Focus, Spotify, and iTunes. And I just interview people that are thought leaders, innovators, doctors, policymakers about the past, present, and future of women's health and wellness. Done over 100 interviews to date, which I think I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who's ever done that many. We're the only Femtech podcast. We have about 13,000 listeners in trees. And what that tells me is that people are eating it up. They're just like, oh my God, I need to know about this. So we started a podcast for awareness. We do a lot of research and publications in order to, you know, not let investors say, well, that market doesn't exist. We want to publish papers that say, oh, actually it's a $600 billion market, you know, like, and here's the number of women and that, you know, education through data. And then we also, I'm all about empowering the founders, especially These are femtech founders, men and women, mostly women, which is pretty dope, but you know, both genders leading these companies. Sure. And what's in their core is that women deserve more. Women are dying without this innovation. And I love that that's their passion. And I want to do whatever I can to help them succeed. And so Femtech Focus, we do a lot of, you know, just networking, connecting the dots for people. We're so siloed in Femtech. So we're bringing it together. We do biweekly webinars called Femtech Fundamentals, where I give a lecture on how do you make a pitch deck without wasting 6 slides on what is menopause? You know, like, how do you do this? And so that's what we're doing. And we're also getting the investment game, because there are some investors that are tuning in saying, wow, you're right. This is the right thing to do. Where do I put my money? And then I got all these startups that have really amazing traction and deal, like amazing companies, and we're matchmaking them.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you said that Femtech Focus is a nonprofit, and I find this, like, I find your trajectory very interesting, because you've gone from founder, like traditional, when you think of like startup founders, like that highly scalable technology solution that you know has a great growth potential, like you started there around a very sexy topic, you know, pheromones, dating,
sexual wellness has been a common thread.
You started there, and then you went to the other side and you became a VC, and now you are in the nonprofit world, which is, that's a little bit of a mind fuck. I'm not going to lie. Like that, you're all over the map, sister. What has it been like to helm a nonprofit when you come from such for-profit?
Well, you know, it was honestly, it's all strategy. So when I started it, we were a podcast, and I knew we wanted to do events that educate people, reports and research, all of that screams nonprofit. And I'm a businesswoman, and if I can get Slack for free, because I'm a 501c3, I'm gonna do it. We don't pay for most of our programs, because we're a nonprofit. Get sponsors for my podcast by saying you can write this off because we'll say that it's supported by, you know? Right. And so for me, it really wasn't about like, oh, I want to be a nonprofit, like martyr. It was more like, how can I make
I don't think anybody really does that, by the way. Like, that's not the thing. It's like, you are in it for the cause. You're not in it for the money, and certainly not the prestige.
So for me, it was a business strategy. You know, and listeners, I'm learning along the way, and I'm always quick to put my hand up and be open to saying, learning which way I should go next or what I could currently be doing, you know, but for right now, it's the right move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, congratulations to you. Now I'm going to ask, and this is a question that's just for me for funsies. There's really no other reason, but, I just want to know, like, you have your fingers in the pies of, and your finger on the pulse of so many really interesting technology companies related to women. Mm-hmm. What are some of the coolest innovations that you see coming down the pipeline?
Man,
I know that's a really tough question, and like, you don't have to name by name and you don't have to pick just one, but I'm really curious as to what you've seen that you're just like, wow, that is, not only is that so needed, but it's so disruptive as a product.
All right, I got some for you. It's so funny that you say which is the coolest, because they are actually the most basic, and that's what makes them the coolest.
Well, because they're going to have the most impact, right? Yeah.
All right. So here's one, Materna Medical. So it's been forever since women has started having babies. When you have a baby through your vagina, it is very often that your bottom's going to rip. You rip from your vagina to your anus, and everyone's just accepted this as status quo. And apparently nobody's ever thought maybe we should do something to like help women's vaginas, like not rip, because of all the consequences that happen afterwards. And so Materna Medical is actually the first med device in clinical trials right now. It actually helps the vagina spread while the baby's coming out, and so the woman doesn't have to rip anymore. Yeah. Again, super basic.
Super simple, but very well. And I think, isn't there like a really high incidence or likelihood of infection once the tissue down there rips? Like, and that's super dangerous.
Yeah. And it's all your pelvic floor muscles. And so that's what leads to your incontinence, not being able to hold your bladder. 1 in 3women are literally peeing their pants every day. Also, the number one reason women are putting into nursing homes is from pelvic organ prolapse. So the weaker your pelvic floor is, that's the number one reason women are put into nursing homes.
I do have to admit, like, full disclosure, folks who are listening, when you used the word rip, Dr. Barreto, I did kind of go like, oh, okay. I did have like a very visceral reaction to that. So thank you for that.
So that's
really cool. Anything else that you want to kind of,
okay, so that was kind of like gory, right? Here's another, this one's kind of fun.
I let's talk about it. Let's normalize it. But yes, I did have just a,
So this one, this woman, she's amazing. Her name's Frances. She's out of Los Angeles. She was a baker, and she's married, and, she's on birth control, and her husband would ejaculate inside of her. And she was going to the bathroom being like, why is this so that I have to use all these tissues and towels to like clean myself up after sex? Like, why couldn't there be like an actual product for women? And so her company is called Awkward Essentials, and it's sexual hygiene products for women. And her first product is called Come and Gone. And it is a sponge on a stick for women to use and post-sex cleanup. And she is birthing it. I say birthing instead of killing it. It's a femtech joke, but she's totally birthing it. She's got like 6 figures in revenue, and like, it's her in her parents' garage, you know, like, it's crazy that women were like, oh my God, we needed this, you know? And she's so fun with all of her marketing. It's like really creative and fun. And so it's also like, people ask me, what should I do in femtech? Literally think about a daily life of a woman, and probably anything could be innovated.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, there, as far as I know, like, for the longest time, there were very few innovations in women's healthcare. I mean, the tampon has been the tampon for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you might see like small innovations, like, you know, plastic applicator, like what have you. But for the most part, like, if you looked at a tampon 20 years ago and you looked at one today, it's like, oh, that is very recognizable to me. That's interesting. Right. Well, I don't know. I was very, very curious about that. So I want to take it back a little bit back to the, well, a lot back to the 10,000 foot view. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, give us some information. You're a science person, so I'm sure you're all about data, but, you know, give us some of the information when you talk about the information that FemTech Focus puts out there. Why mm-hmm. is this work important? Like, what, if you could have our audience leave with one takeaway as to why there needs to be a focus on fem-focused technologies, mm-hmm. what is that reason?
Let me give you just some big ones to take away with you. Yeah. This is an easy thing to quote. So if you're listening, feel free to take this back, bring it to a dinner party, tell your friends, your family. Today, as a 29-year-old woman, I am twice as likely to die from childbirth than my own mother. Maternal mortality rate is on a steep increase. Specifically in the US, we have the highest maternal mortality rates of any developed country. And Black women die 3 times more than white women during childbirth, and Brown women die 7 times more than white women. Yeah. And so that is why we need innovation, because literally women are dying from childbirth, the thing that you may imagine would be totally figured out by this point, and it's not.
I think that people have this like conception that like, oh, we're such a highly developed country. And the fact is, like, we fall behind on a lot of health metrics, but some of the most concerning are definitely related to women's health.
Yeah, that's right. Another one, again, you can take this one to the bank, bring to a party, talk about it. Women, it was illegal for them to be in clinical trials until 1993. So any drugs that hit the market before 1993 were never tested on a woman. And so women have 5 times more side effects than men do because it was never tested on our metabolism. And so women are most often prescribed the male dose, even though our metabolism is that of a woman. And so a great example of that is Ambien. Ambien breaks down in men's biology way different than women's. And so we need a very different dose, but it took like 2 decades for doctors to finally realize that.
Yeah. Well, so that is certainly food for thought, you know, concerning and sad and angry making all at the same time. But the fact that we have leaders like you who are putting the spotlight where it needs to be
It's bright. You know, I do not want to lead an organization that every day is like, damn, life is the worst. This is not the company I want to run. That's not the podcast that we have. We want, you know, underneath of it is like anger and like frustration. But on the top, it's like, well, then let's do it. Like, what an opportunity. Yeah.
We are in this. We're going to make some change. We're going to save some lives today.
And like, let's get on board. And you know what? As an investor, let's make money, right? Like, let's do this. Let's invest in this. Let's change women's lives. It's actually my favorite industry. Having worked in dating, having worked in oil and gas, like a bunch of different industries, FemTech's my favorite one because we're so collaborative. It's my favorite.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you the human question. And I forewarned you that this was coming.
Yeah.
And I think I'm actually going to, I'm really, really interested to hear your response to this one. And I love this question and I think you'll probably love it too. But tell me, who's your hero? Ooh. I'm sure you have a lot, but if you could just name one. We could say hero, we could say Shiro or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Who do you look up to and admire?
I look up and admire Michelle Obama.
Okay.
She presents herself with, and politics aside, y'all, literally She just presents herself with such poise in an environment of such chaos. I aspire to be like that because I'm very emotional. I'm emotionally driven. I'm passionate. I have a deep fire in my chest, you know, and sometimes I can be someone who reacts. I can reply to that email way too fast. I can make my, you know, I have a face on that people that I'm like, oh, that's rude. You know, like I need to think about like, how can I show up as a leader? Because it's bigger than just me. And I feel like Michelle Obama just always shows up and is like positive and strong and calm. And that's just something I really aspire to be more like, even in the face of people doubting her or saying negative things.
Yeah. In addition to all of those things that you just said, which I heartily like agree with, also got to say those arms though, man, like I want them. I need them. Like that is a physical perfection right there. All right. Well, I cannot tell you how appreciative I am of your time today, Dr. Brittany Barreto. I keep using like your full name because I haven't gotten the permission from you yet to say Dr. Brittany. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do that if that's not cool. So I'm just like, well, fine. I'll just say the whole thing because I definitely want to get that doctor piece in there. Like, that's really important to me. Like, look at how badass this woman is. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us here today and telling us about FemTech Focus and talking to us about innovations in, you know, women's health and in women's lives. Like, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. So if your listeners were inspired today, they think, wow, that's juicy. Like, I want to learn more about that. Check out FemTech
Focus. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't be an appropriate or awesome Startup Hustle episode if I didn't thank Full Scale one more time for just being incredible sponsors to us and allowing to do this work that we all love so much and that we love to share with you. But if you are looking to build a software team quickly and affordably, Full Scale it's got to be the way to be. They are awesome. Thank you so much, Full Scale. And thank you, listeners, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to us and learn with us. And we will catch you next time. Talk to you later.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.